It's raining in Baltimore. That's Counting Crows. I'm Blake Murphy. This is Jays Top Plus. Simple one off the top today because the Blue Jays got rained out in Baltimore yesterday. That game was canceled. Nice and early. Didn't have to do the delay cancel thing. They will make that game up as part of a doubleheader in late July when the Blue Jays are back in Baltimore. The good news is that it looks like we're going to play ball today. The tarp is on the field right now. It's lightly raining down in Baltimore, but the forecast is pretty clear. All the concerns we had about not getting today's game in kind of got there early and canceled yesterday's game. So within this, the Blue Jays have a chance, and there would be an asterisk because it's only a two-game series, but the Orioles are on a streak of 104 consecutive series without losing a series. The Jays would have a chance. Yes, it's only a 2-0, but even if the series was 3, you would have taken it if you won 2. Quite the opportunity to end one of the longest streaks in the history of Major League Baseball. That really speaks to how well the Orioles have played this year, how well they played last year. It, of course, excludes a playoff series sweep as well. So asterisk all over the place here. But either way, the Jays could use a series win. They haven't won a three-game series in quite a while themselves here. So it feels like not a huge game, certainly not the curse word-sized game John Schneider made Monday's win out to be, but it should be a fun one and a little something on the line for the Orioles in addition to just wanting to get a win back against a division opponent. A couple housekeeping items for you. So the game's 12:35, so we're going to be with you right into the game at 12:35. It'll be Ben Shulman and Chris LaRue for you on the call. TV side, as usual, Blue Jays Central with Jamie and Joe at 12. Don't switch over, though. Stay with us. We'll have Chris LaRue down here at that point. We had to up the handsome factor to compete with Blue Jays Central. We'll have Julie Kreutz on in a minute here as well. We'll also talk to Alex Fast around 11:30. In addition to being an Orioles guy, he's the director of content and product strategy at MLB. So if you've seen any of this new bat speed stuff going around, the article's written about it. It's made its way into some broadcasts and things like that. Alex had a big hand in that. We'll talk to him about that process and what we can learn from some of that. And we'll talk some Jays Orioles as well. It is Yusei Kikuchi starting today. The Jays obviously faced with an option here with yesterday's game being called of do you bump everyone one day? And that would have meant Chris Bassitt is starting today. Or do you juggle things and let Kikuchi go? The Jays opted to go with Kikuchi today. The Orioles went the other route and bumped everyone. So Kyle Bradish will start today. We'll talk a little bit more about that pitching matchup later in the show as we go through the lineups and things like that. But needless to say, the Jays get a tougher spot with Kyle Bradish, even though Cole Irvin is a lefty. You'd probably rather face Irvin in this one than Kyle Bradish, given what Bradish has been able to do since coming back off the IL and given the season he had last year. You've also seen a ton of him. He started 6 times against the Jays over 2022 and 2023. You should be pretty familiar with Kyle Bradish at this point. On the Kikuchi side, interesting choice for the Jays. And I'd imagine some of this came down to, well, you say Kikuchi's in routine. He's ready to go for a 12:30 start. Let's not have multiple guys change up what they're doing, change up their side session days and things like that. Let's just keep Kikuchi, who is a routine-oriented guy, in that spot. But it is a little interesting because Chris Bassitt has struggled a lot with left-handed hitters this year. The Orioles can put as many as 7 left-handed hitters in the lineup all at once because of their switch hitters, because of how many lefties they have off the bench and things like that. However, the Orioles have also hit left-handed pitching better than any team except the Arizona Diamondbacks this year. And that goes back to last year as well. They were one of the best teams hitting lefties last year. We know an Adley Rutschman hits better from the right side than from the left side. They have a guy like Anthony Santander with pretty sizable platoon splits. Ryan Mountcastle has had his moments against non-Blue Jays left-handed pitching as well as Blue Jays left-handed pitching. He has 4 career home runs off Yusei Kikuchi, by the way, so a guy to keep an eye on today. And then they have a couple of left-handed hitters who are hitting well off of lefties so far. Maybe you're a little skeptical that Gunnar Henderson and Colton Cowser will always hit at an elite level lefty on lefty, but for now they've done a pretty good job. On the Jays side, mostly everyone is back to being able to play from all the illnesses they've dealt with. Danny Jansen was scheduled to be back yesterday after dealing with back spasms on Monday. He's in the lineup today and catching. George Springer's back and he's in the leadoff spot today. We can talk about that a little bit. I'm sure we will over the course of the show. Davis Schneider is in the lineup, but he's going to hit 6th. He's not going to hit near the top of the lineup there. Also three lefties in against Bradish, including Daniel Vogelbach. So let's talk about some of this stuff. Let's take a look at this game. Let's also have some fun. There was no game yesterday to talk about. It got rained out. So who better to have some fun with than Julia Kreutz of MLB.com, of BlueJays.com. She joins us now. Julia, last time we had you on, you had caught a little bit of the illness that was going around the Blue Jays clubhouse. Please tell me you're feeling okay today.
Yeah, feeling better for sure. Like, I think you'll still hear it a little bit in my voice, but thankfully doing all right. And honestly, I don't envy these guys, not even a little bit. It seems like everyone in the city is getting sick right now, which is pretty scary. And we're seeing, you know, when it starts impacting professional athletes, like, what are we supposed to do?
Nothing. I mean, like, they have the downside of having to travel together and be in the dugout together and things like that. I guess they have to. It's not like they were quarantining the sick guys the other day. But yeah, hopefully this is mostly behind them. Justin Turner, the one notable name, not in the lineup still today. Maybe that was a matchup thing, but potentially not back to 100% yet. So the Jays did play through this on Monday. Jose Berríos starts when they didn't know if he was going to start. Kevin Gausman, it sounds like, was ready not only to pitch, but to swing a bat if he needed to, like if they didn't have nine guys to go. Look, we know better in baseball than to think one game, especially with an off day after that and things like that, is going to turn things around. But are you a believer a little bit in, you know, John Schneider's quotes after the game that was a pretty, I'll clean it up here, a pretty big win for the Blue Jays, all things considered?
Yeah, all things considered, for sure. It's, you know, there's so much that goes on in the background that we don't know, and it's natural that we don't know. I don't think that anyone can, you know, begrudge either John Schneider or the fan base for, you know, being frustrated at times, and why isn't this guy in the lineup, and why are they doing this certain thing with the bullpen and whatnot. But the truth of the matter is that there are factors at play that sometimes we're not privy to until much later, and illness is one of those. You talk about the way that the Blue Jays have been just trying to put nine healthy guys on the field. It does give you a different perspective of what it is that this team has been dealing with so far this season. Let's not forget, it's not the first time. We remember that Chris Bassitt, maybe a month or so ago, did say in an interview, a post-game interview, that, you know, everyone was sick with a sinus infection. So this seems to be a two-bout type of thing. And so obviously it is going to affect performance at the pitch. At the same time, when you can eke out a win and battle out a win the way that the Blue Jays did against the Orioles in the first game, you have to believe that that has, you know, some sort of motivation. And when these guys do come back to full health, they're probably going to have that in the back of their mind, because it's a moment in which you can go, this is what we can accomplish as a team.
Yeah, and then, look, there's a chance to carry that over a little bit today, not necessarily in a momentum way, but you build a couple wins. You know, we thought Saturday, maybe the bats getting going would be a step in that direction. Sunday didn't turn out that way. You know, Monday, maybe that's a step in the right direction. Look, if they could win today, they'd win a series off the Orioles. I mentioned off the top, the Orioles have won or split 104 consecutive series. So this is a hard thing to do, to take two in Baltimore, to take two against Baltimore anywhere. The Jays haven't won a series in a month now. So even a small victory like that can go a little bit. You also have this stretch of play coming up where you're going to, yes, the Rays are the Rays. They're always going to be the Rays. They're a little under 500 right now, and that leads into a 13-game stretch against sub-500 teams, White Sox, Detroit, White Sox, Pirates. So there is a chance here to get a little bit going. So even if we don't believe in one-game momentum, suddenly you got two there. Suddenly the schedule takes a little bit of a turn. Do you feel kind of like this has to be the time? There's a lot of season left. Hello, dog. There is a lot of season left. Does she want to say hi?
I'm so sorry.
No, it's great.
This is a radio first show, and so I figured she's a little needy right now. She's dealing with some tummy issues, and so she was like, I said, okay, just stay very still on my lap. But she doesn't listen to me.
It's okay. She's beautiful, and she's trying to cheer on the Blue Jays by having the same intestinal issues. What I was getting at there is, you know, the Jays do have an opportunity here, and I'm not saying if they don't take advantage of these next couple weeks they're done or anything like that, but it really does feel like this has got to be kind of the time, whether it's taking the series off the Orioles and then taking that into a Rays series. But no, like, no one's going to take, if they go 9-4 against White Sox, Tigers, Pirates, no one, I don't think, is going to get too high about that. But you put that also with took two in Baltimore, took a series against the Rays. Suddenly it starts to look like maybe you've played better baseball.
For sure. And let's take a look at the previous opponent here in the Minnesota Twins, right? They put together a pretty nice, pretty historic win streak because they were playing teams such as the White Sox, and they had some A's in there too. And all of a sudden they win 11 in a row, and a season that started out pretty disappointing for Minnesota fans, all of a sudden it does create not just some momentum, but some hope and some belief that the team is for real. So I think health is number one for the Blue Jays. And then number two is really taking care of business against those teams. I agree with you that the Rays are always going to be a tough opponent no matter what. These teams see each other so frequently that there are really no secrets at this point. But they're also not at their 100% right now. And the Blue Jays seemed to be trending in the right direction for a little bit. There was a really tough stretch there. And again, we don't know how much health impacts that stuff. But this is a team that has seen some momentum earlier on in the season. And now that they're finally going to see some opponents that are sub 500, the schedule eases up a little bit in that way. Then all of a sudden you're talking a little bit more, I guess, with more propriety about creating that momentum, which is something that John Schneider has spoken about time and time again in the sort of the impetus to create that momentum and to keep something good going. It is much easier to do against teams that are not on the winning side of the table.
Yeah, I would certainly say the White Sox will be one of the easier teams you'll face this season, even if they're not quite as bad as like the 3-18 start they got off to or whatever. Julia, the Jays will task Yusei Kikuchi with getting that next win for them today. A couple of things could have gone into this decision after the rainout yesterday. My guess is that all the numbers stuff kind of comes out in the wash, and we know Kikuchi's really routine oriented. That's maybe a part of this. It could be as simple also as Baltimore is the best team in the American League. Kikuchi's been your best pitcher so far. But there is a little bit of a back and forth here in my head where Bassett has really struggled against lefties. The Orioles can stack lefties in the lineup, but the Orioles hit left-handed pitching better than just about anyone in the league. So there's a no-win situation when you're against a team this good. What did you make of this decision to go with Kikuchi today over bumping everyone back a day, which would land Chris Bassett in this spot?
It was a little puzzling to me. And again, it's so difficult to quantify all of the factors that go into it, because as we have seen over the past two series or so, there's a lot that we don't know. But I do believe that Kikuchi being very routine oriented should be one of those factors here. And his stuff is just nasty right now. He's been pitching so well. And this is a guy that you want facing, arguably the best team in the American League. It's at the end of the day, you want your best pitcher facing the toughest opposing lineup. So yes, it's a little puzzling because you kind of wonder where to go from here. But at the end of the day, Kikuchi deserves to be on the mound for this finale against the Orioles.
Yeah, certainly. It'll be a lot of fun. And it's also, I don't know, it makes for good baseball. You got one of the best left-handed pitchers in baseball so far this season against a team that has hit left-handed pitching better than anyone other than the Arizona Diamondbacks. Give me best versus best, and let's see how it goes. Julia, this is maybe a question for later in the week coming off of this next off day tomorrow, but the Jays do start a stretch of 13 games in 13 days starting Friday. Rest in peace to your personal commitments and your social life and things like that. They can, because of all these off days in the rainout, they can tweak the rotation here a little bit. They can be a little bit methodical about what they do here. If they slide everyone back, it'll look one way. They could juggle a little bit. I know that you wrote about Alek Manoah's takeaways from Alek Manoah's start on Sunday when you were covering that series. The biggest question to me is, Alek Manoah was on paper lined up to pitch against the Tampa Bay Rays this weekend on Sunday, I think. You could use these extra off days to tweak that a little bit so that Manoah's next start comes against the White Sox on Monday, who are the worst hitting team in baseball. It would also mean he only has to start twice in that 13-13 stretch. You get your three best, not your three best because Kikuchi won't be in there, but three of your better pitchers in there an extra time. Would you tweak Manoah so he gets the kind of softer next opponent to keep building up? Or do you worry that maybe that would, you know, the confidence factor here coming off a good start against the Twins, you maybe don't want to over tinker?
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, speaking to Manoah after the game, you can see that his mentality seems to be in the right place in that he is speaking as a team player first, right? He understands where he is, and he is not, I do believe that his ego is pretty much in check right now. So I don't think that it would affect his confidence in any way, because this is just what team players do. They understand where they are and what they can do and how they can best help a team. I would say that the Blue Jays would be, you know, smart to at least consider tweaking a little bit so that he is not facing the Rays, because yes, that was a very, very good start. And, you know, you can see the positives. You can see that, you know, the all the talk about repeating the delivery, he was able to prove that he can do that even when he gets into trouble. You know, a couple of crucial double plays during that start, meaning that he's locating his pitch as well. He is staying within the game plan. He's trusting Alejandro Kirk, which is something that we have seen before. But, you know, he spoke a couple of times of, well, Kirk just kept calling for the changeup, so I kept throwing the changeup. And so you can see that they are very much on the same page in that way. That is all very, very good. But the path for Manoah to come back, you know, no questions asked into this rotation and be a part of it permanently is far from over after one good start. So this is very much about building him up still to where he once was for the Blue Jays. And we are seeing that at the highest level out of necessity, because the Blue Jays have had so many pitching injuries with Yariel Rodriguez and Bowden Francis. And there's still question marks there about when these guys will be available. And so Manoah is now, you know, developing himself back on the highest level. If the Blue Jays can do anything to help him out as well as he continues to build himself up, then they should probably consider it. And these games against the Rays are also very important. So you would probably want your best bona fide pitchers out there on the mound.
Yeah, the Chicago White Sox have scored 24 fewer runs than any other team in baseball. So if you were going to pick, if there were a quad A level that a pitcher would work his way back up, that would be it. Speaking of AAA, you mentioned Bowden Francis. I'll just mention here, he got a rehab start at AAA Buffalo yesterday, just blew through two innings, 28 pitches, four strikeouts, only one base runner. We haven't heard yet if he's going to do another rehab assignment. He looks ready to rejoin the bullpen based on how he looked against those AAA hitters yesterday. Julia, I want to take it a little lighter, a little less specific about today's games. Another thing you got to write about this weekend covering the team was cricket night on Friday. We talked to Vivek Jacob, who's going to be covering Canada in the T20 World Cup this summer on Friday to tee it up. What did you learn about the sport and about kind of the crossover between baseball and cricket in writing that story and covering that night?
It was really fun to ask cricket players about Shohei Ohtani, for example, because we know that, you know, cricket is a sport that it's a little more common for guys to be good on both sides of the ball. But the admiration is not lost, you know, and what a guy like Ohtani does and just the uniqueness of it. They understand better than most how difficult that is. So those were really, really fun conversations. And then just seeing the true effort in uniting fan bases, right? In understanding what the city of Toronto is in its diversity and its plurality and this really genuine effort from everyone that was there to kind of understand each other better, which was really, really cool. You know, cricket players are not necessarily following baseball religiously, but they also really, really enjoyed being there and watching the game and watching what goes into a baseball game. So, yeah, I don't know. These things are, you kind of get away from the nitty gritty and just the grind of the baseball season and seeing the other side of it, seeing so many Blue Jays fans who maybe hail from countries in the Caribbean or in India or Pakistan and who are donned head to toe, right, in Blue Jays gear. And then they're just chasing after cricket players in the ballpark. It was just so, so much fun to sort of see that intersection and to see that there is a legitimate effort in an interest in bringing a more diverse crowd to the ballpark, in really, going out there and getting new fans, different fans, to enjoy baseball. I think that is so important in this day and age. It starts with something as granular as rule changes, right? You can see that there is an effort in baseball right now to amplify, to bring more people in, to make the sport more accessible. And then the Blue Jays are pretty much at the forefront right now of finding their own ways to make that happen and to cater to the city where they are. So that was a pretty rewarding one to write, Blake.
I'm going to do the complete opposite now in terms of appealing to a broader demographic with respect to baseball and bring up something that aired originally on TV before most major league players currently playing were born. And that is the Homer at the Bat episode of The Simpsons, which everyone obviously knows for. Anyone who is a Simpsons fan or a baseball fan or both surely knows that episode and has their favorite parts from it. You actually got to ask Don Mattingly and write about shave those sideburns, Mattingly. How long, like, how quickly when the Jays add Don Mattingly were you like, okay, I'm pitching this or chasing that story? Like, it feels like that's one, if you're ever going to write it, that was like A1 on your list of when Mattingly came to the Jays, you wanted to do that.
Wow, I'm about to disappoint a lot of people, I think, but I only got into The Simpsons last year. I want to say mid last year.
Okay.
So when that episode came on, I was like, oh, okay, this is pretty wild. This is fun. But he's Don Mattingly. He's a very busy guy. It is difficult to even find time to chat with him because he's in and out of meetings and obviously has a lot of responsibilities with the team, which I respect. And then it just turned out that I had to write a different feature. I was already going to talk to him anyway, and I said, you know what? Whatever. I'm just gonna ask about this. I don't really know how much he's been asked about this in the past. I did my research. I hadn't seen necessarily much written about it. So, well, he's either going to give me a very, very good answer, or he's going to say that he doesn't want to talk about it. And it was thankfully the first one, where he just gave me a very honest and fun answer, and he just like lit up, right? It was so nice to see the transition from we're talking about baseball, and then here's just an end of the interview question, very just not I didn't really want anything from it, and just he just yeah smiled brightly and said, listen, I've never seen the episode, but this is what happens everywhere I go. People have Simpsons images for me to sign, and they yell at me to trim those sideburns, and it's fun, which is a good thing to tack on, because the last thing that you want is a guy to forget to say that and then say, and I hate it. I wish they would stop. But no, he's having fun with it too. So again, right? You bringing up even the diversity of sport and bringing in different fans. Something that Mattingly brought up was that when he was in Australia for opening day, when he was managing the Dodgers, people didn't really know who he was for his playing career or all the accolades or anything like that. People didn't really understand that he was the manager of the Los Angeles Dodgers. But one thing that they did know is that he needed to trim those sideburns.
And look, the timing of your piece at BlueJays.com was great too, because I believe it was right around when he trimmed his beard and said, hey, the Jays are losing. I got to try something different. Julia, thank you so much for taking the time out this morning. An afternoon game with your partner out of town. I can only imagine what the lunch options are for you today. Like, I don't know. I would go full degenerate if I were you, but I won't tell you what to do.
Listen, my fridge is pretty depressing right now, so I will take suggestions.
All
She's
right.
back tomorrow, thankfully,
All
so we'll be
right.
back for regular schedule.
Yeah, you'll make it. You'll make it. No, takeout never hurt anyone. Julia Kreutz of MLB.com, of BlueJays.com. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Julia Kreutz, MLB.com. By the way, our conversation about how the Jays will restructure their rotation. Things can always change depending on how today goes and how everyone's feeling out of the off day. But John Schneider did say in his pregame media availability while we were having that conversation that it's going to go Bassett, Gausman, Manoah on the weekend. So the Jays aren't going to use that opportunity to get Alek Manoah to change up the rotation and have Alek Manoah go against the White Sox on Monday. That would be Jose Berríos to start, followed by Kikuchi in that White Sox series. Again, things can obviously change, but Schneider said pregame that the plan was, Yeah, Bassett's going to just slot back in Friday. Everything else kind of moves today. So Bassett, Gausman, Manoah, and then Berríos will go Monday instead of shifting into that Sunday slot, which they could have done. So, tougher next start for Alek Manoah. But, hey, we thought the last one would be a tough one as well, and he came out of that one looking pretty good. The quote from John Schneider on juggling these per Shai Davidi is they looked at with Kikuchi and Bassett at what they've done against this team and the team they're facing in Tampa, how they aligned righty lefty, and Chris being pretty flexible was part of the thinking too. So kind of all the things we said, the lefty versus righty component, the history against these teams component, and then Chris Bassett being a little more routine agnostic, we'll say, than Yusei Kikuchi. So we'll talk about that more as the show continues. Right now, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Alex Fass, the director of content and product strategy at MLB. A lot of cool new stuff over at MLB and over at StatCast, a lot of cool stuff that we're still figuring out the best ways to implement. And Alex is also an Orioles guy. So if you've ever wondered if a guy with the last name Cowser has a Dairy Daddy promotional tie-in in Baltimore, we will get that answer as well from Alex Fass as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. Even for me, that's a little bit on the sour end as far as music to come back to. It is raining in Baltimore very, very lightly, though. It looks like we're going to get this game in, maybe even start it on time. 12:35, first pitch as the Jays try to break the Orioles streak of 104 consecutive series without losing one. It would be a two-game set only, but you take two in Baltimore, you feel pretty good about yourself. Yusei Kikuchi versus Kyle Bradish at 12:35. Someone who we've talked to about the Orioles in the past, but we have a million things much higher level MLB-wide to talk to about today, is Alex Fass. He's the director of content and product strategy at MLB. He joins us now. Alex, good morning, man. Thanks for doing this. How we doing?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks so much for having me. Excited to be back.
Appreciate it. Thanks for coming on. So you moved, since we last talked to you, you moved into this role, director of content and product strategy at MLB. I know some of what you do, and I want to talk about some of that, but can you give us a high level of what your role entails with Major League Baseball right now?
Yeah, sure. Great question. So there's a lot of things that kind of fall under my purview, but most recently I've been working really closely with the Baseball Savant team, actually, to set priorities, figure out how we can continue to bring great StatCast metrics like bat tracking to the fans and really as many people as possible.
Yeah, and then look, Baseball Savant, for anyone who doesn't know, was originally the creation of Darren Willman, who won a World Series ring with the Texas Rangers last year. So that is a World Series champion Baseball Savant page, no matter who wins the World Series from now on. So Alex, how do you and your team work with, like, obviously there are the data people who are taking all of these Hawkeye cameras and sorting through the hundreds of thousands of lines of code to figure out what's what. What is the process like of you being on the kind of product and content team being like, hey, this would be usable, this would be cool for fans, this would be nice to see. How does that whole process work? How does something like the new bat speed stuff come from the idea of, hey, it'd be cool to see this, to now we can all search it and filter it and things like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's a really interesting pipeline and process. I mean, first of all, I like truly cannot say enough about the Baseball Savant team overall. Obviously started by Darren Willman, and a lot of guys like picked up the mantle there. People I know you're familiar with, like Mike Petriello, Tom Tango, who's very much on the Sabermetrics Mount Rushmore, Dana Bennett, Jason Bernard. They're a force to be reckoned with. They've, you know, done a lot of great work with a slew of other MLB employees. There are like constantly things that we want to bring to fans. We are all huge baseball fans at our core. So it's like kind of like we're kids in a candy store. So we're like, okay, what are we going to talk about next? The backlog of fun things that we have to explore is incredibly deep. So a lot of it is really talking through, you know, what's available, what's the cleanest data at the moment, what do we have schedule-wise, what do we have bandwidth-wise, and then thinking about, like, what are fans really going to be into right now? What can we explore that fans are really going to get a kick out of? It's really going to help them understand the game a little bit better. And that's kind of why bat tracking, you know, kind of became a no-brainer. It's fun. It's, at the end of the day, you know, somewhat easy to understand because you're talking about how fast does a guy swing a bat, right? So we thought fans would get a kick out of that, so we were really excited to explore it.
Yeah, and look, we know a lot more on the pitcher side than the hitter side so far, so it's nice to balance that out a little bit here. Things like bat speed, swing length, swords, which is basically how often you get embarrassed by a pitcher. Yeah, that's we won't read the leaderboard of that one. That one feels a little cruel to point out on the hitter side. No Jays near the top, though, so you're good there. Okay, so in this process, Mike Petriello has talked to me before a little bit about, hey, like, I can see in the back end that, like, this data was kind of there in 2023 in the MLB research tools, but it's not exactly the same. This is a little different. What was kind of the testing phase like to make sure this bat speed stuff was ready to go?
Super, super meticulous. I mean, when you're releasing something at this scale, you want to assure that it's as accurate and perfect as can be. You don't want to rush anything like this. You know, I came on a little bit later in the process for sure, but I know that it took a whole year plus. And that's because data quality just really needs to be ensured. You know, the bat moves 100 feet per second, right? There's so much sensitivity there. Hawkeye does a wonderful job tracking it, but it's pretty mind-blowing that we're even able to, like, do this to begin with. So once we felt comfortable where it was there, then it was questions about, like, okay, how do we present this? How do we want to tell this story, right? We have to think about, is this metric time-based, right? Is it in feet per second? Is it distance-based, right? And then, okay, it's time-based. Time from what? Where does it start? Where does it end? What do we do about foul balls? What do we do about check swings? Like, so many different variables and factors to consider. And then once we settle on those variables, once the data is cleaned, we settled on those variables, how do we make this digestible, right? How are we able to deliver this to fans in a way that it's not overly scientific or has a lot of mathematical jargon? It's just fun, relatable baseball talk. And I think we've been able to conquer all those tasks. And from the reaction, I think we've done a pretty good job there. But yeah, it's been a laborious road, but a really good one, thanks to the team that we have.
Yeah, the reaction's been pretty fun. A lot of great content out there already on this stuff. I'm excited to dig in on some more stuff. You know, I think I'm going to do an article later this week on, like, what does two-strike approach actually look like when we have the bat speed and the swing length and stuff like that. Do guys actually slow down? Do they, you know, is it a slower swing, but it's quicker to the ball and you know, like a little slower and shorter, that kind of thing. These things that we have always thought and talked about and now can at least, like, confirm or deny with the numbers and dig in a little further. One of the things that struck me when bat speed came out, and this is something on the basketball side we've dealt with pace. When, you know, the Steve Nash Suns come along, they play at a faster pace. And there's a minute there where everyone talks about pace, like pace is the goal itself. And it's not, right? It's a stylistic thing. It's a descriptor. And I wonder, it's not your responsibility with the bat speed stuff, but we are going to have to, as a baseball media, as a baseball stats community, make sure we communicate to people that bat speed isn't everything. On average, a faster bat speed will lead to a harder exit velocity, will lead to more productive or more damage on your swings and stuff like that. But there are also guys like Luis Arraez, who a slower bat speed is a feature, not a bug. That's something he's doing with intent, and that suits his style. What do we all have to do kind of from here to make sure that it's not, you know, we've dealt with this with pitcher velocity a little bit too, is, okay, the bat speed isn't the goal. It's the style of how you become a productive hitter. And there are different ways to go about that.
Yeah, that is really, really well said. And it's something that we are doing our best to try and convey to people. And listen, I'm completely empathetic to the fact that when people see a leaderboard, it is intuitive to see who is at the top equals good, who is at the bottom equals bad. That's how we all think. It's how we've been thinking our entire lives. And what we're trying to make people focus on is the fact that the bottom of this list by no means means bad, right? It doesn't mean you're a productive hitter. The way you put it with fastball velocity is a really good way to think about it. If a guy throws 100 and another guy throws 92, the guy who throws 92 can be just as productive as the guy who is throwing 100, right? Is it good to have fastball velocity? 100%, right? But that tool set that you have at throwing 92 can be just as valuable. Just like you said, Luis Arraez is at the bottom of the average bat speed. He is a back-to-back batting champion. It does not mean Luis Arraez does not have a quote-unquote good swing. He's got a fantastic swing. Stephen Kwan, another great example, slower bat speed, but able to get the barrel to the ball, able to square the ball up a lot. Even thinking about Adley Rutschman, right, who had those home runs 2 days ago, mm-hmm. right? The average swing speed on a home run is 75 miles an hour. If I recall correctly, both his home runs were at 71 miles per hour. Still was a home run, right? Doesn't necessarily mean if you have below average bat speed that you are not a productive hitter. So I'm so happy you brought that up, because it's definitely something we're trying to make people aware of.
So I do want to talk a little bit more Jays Orioles, but final question on the data side here. Is there a kind of dream data set for you, or like the next, obviously bat speed's brand new. I don't want to be like, okay, what's the next thing? But when we think about what could be next, what else could we do with the Hawkeye stuff? What else are you guys maybe even testing? What is kind of the dream next piece of information for you? So I'll give you mine to give an example to make sure I'm making this clear. Something like the spin that gets put on the ball off the bat. We've heard Jose Bautista talk about how part of his breakout was he was able to change the way the ball was spinning off of his bat. It's one of my curiosities with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. having this gap between exit velocity and like expected results and actual results. Maybe it's something to do with the spin coming off. So that's something I'd be curious about. Do you have something like that that's kind of like, hey, man, I hope we get this in the next couple of years?
One of the things that I know, you know, some teams already have it, so I don't want to pretend as if this is going to be like an entirely brand new thing, but something that I'm really excited to dig into the way that we did with bat tracking is biomechanical data, right? I think that definitely it has a lot of, you know, juice to squeeze there. There's so much exciting stuff going to cover there. Being able to uncover information about how maybe a pitcher alters their mechanics over the course of a season is really exciting to me as someone who just loves watching pitching. You know, getting clear indication on when folks move in the rubber or when arm slot is changed. You know, we have that a little bit by being able to see average release point and stuff like that. But being able to see that in real time biomechanically and then seeing the rippling impacts of that and what that does with the efficiency of movement, that's very exciting to me.
It could also open up, you know, some pitchers who succeed and their stuff, the way we measure stuff, doesn't match the results. And I think of, say, a Yariel Rodriguez who's new for the Blue Jays, but we know he changes his leg kick. He changes his arm angle. He's doing stuff to disrupt the hitter a little bit. I'm sure there are countless examples of guys who, you know, are able to, whether because they have to or whether to keep hitters off balance, you know, there's a variability there in how you deliver the baseball, which could be interesting. Okay, so let's pivot to Jays Orioles, because you do work for MLB, but you're an Orioles guy. So I gotta ask this first. You shared a tweet yesterday that as part of yesterday's game being rained out, there was also a Colton Cowser day where people were going to be in cow costumes. There was a Dairy Daddy sponsorship tie-in. What is going on here, man?
Yeah, I'm so glad that you brought that up, because it's such like a feel good story about baseball. And it's just like one of the reasons why I love the sport overall so much is because of things like this. So for those who don't know, people started mooing when Colton Cowser started coming up to the plate, because his last name, you know, cow has cow inside of it, right? That evolved like very quickly over a couple of days to folks coming to games dressed in cow costumes and, you know, dressed as milkmen or like straight up full cow attire. There is a fantastic Orioles fan named Jason Benowitz. I think his Twitter handle is like jbenowitz1831, who is just like a force for good and positivity. And I had the pleasure of meeting him during the spring breakout games, and he is a great human being, rallied folks together, dedicated a section in left field to Colton Cowser, and called it the pasture, which is just brilliant. I know Jake Rail, the MLB.com beat writer, had a great article about it as well. It was supposed to happen last night. Honestly, I genuinely don't think I've ever been more upset for a rainout in my entire life, because they have been working so hard on getting this done. I don't know if they're going to bring it back for a future game. I hope they do. But yeah, hats off to Benowitz for putting this together. I really hope it can happen for him.
Cow tie-ins aside, Colton Cowser, yet another top pick that has come up for the Orioles team and succeeded. You know, cup of coffee last year, off to a great start this year. Even he was a guy I mentioned earlier that part of the Orioles' ability to hammer left-handed pitching is that as a lefty, he's done a really good job of that. What have you made? Strikeout rate maybe a little high, but he's a rookie, so we can live with some of those bumps. Just how high is the ceiling for a Colton Cowser? This is a team that has Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman at the top and Jackson Holliday in the waiting. So I kind of feel like Colton Cowser and Jared Westberg maybe don't always get the same level of buzz that prospects of these caliber would on other teams that aren't so prospect rich.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that about Westbrook, because I'm with you on that. That 4-for-4 game that he had a couple of nights ago was absolutely fantastic. His two-strike approach is really exciting to watch. Kowser, apart from just seeing like a dude that folks in the clubhouse love, you know, every time you see an interview with him talking with other teammates, they're like, all right, here comes Colton Kowser, because he just seems like he's absolutely hilarious and a guy who's just great for the game. He hits the heck out of the ball. He is in the 95th percentile in barrel rate overall. And I think one thing that we don't necessarily talk about a lot is the range that he has defensively. It is no secret that left field is relatively big in Camden Yards right now. He is in the 96th percentile in range and outs above average. Arm strength at 98th percentile as well. So he's been getting a lot of recognition for the bat, especially because of that fantastic series in Boston. He was the player of the week that week, but he's also got some defensive chops as well. And that's important to this Orioles lineup, but they've got a lot of great outfielders, not just, you know, Kowser and Heston Kjerstad, but also obviously the old veterans like Hayes and Mullins. So it's a good problem to have for sure, but excited to watch Kowser and Westberg continue to develop.
Yeah. 96th percentile range and outs above average. That's nice to have. I don't know. Maybe the Jays have a guy who's 100th percentile. And robbed Ryan O'Hearn the other night. I guess, like, from a stats perspective and an eye test perspective, how nice is it and how satisfying is it for you guys when you look at those already early on this year, like 6-7 weeks in the season, and the outs above average leaderboard for outfielders really does look like who it feels like the best outfielders are, and Dalton Varsho's top of that list.
That Dalton Varsho catch, you almost had a recognition when you were watching the game where you see the fly ball going to center field and then you see who's chasing it and you're like, all right, well, that's probably just going to be caught. There was a great shot too of Sionel Perez in the bullpen, just like staring to see if it was going to get caught. And that, it was beautiful. To answer your question more directly too, I think what's really exciting for me is when you see a guy like Varsho make a catch like that, and then he looks so effortless doing it. And then you go and look at the catch probability and you're like, oh, it had like a 40% catch probability. It had like a 50% catch probability. And watching it, you don't even realize it because they're so athletic and they make these plays look almost routine. And you see this play here, Varsho, like it just looks like a regular day in the office for him. And it was unbelievable to watch. He's a pleasure to watch in center field. And like you said, he is the best defensive center fielder in baseball right now.
Yeah, enough that because the Jays also employ Kevin Kiermaier and Varsho splits his time center and left, like we might have to change the Gold Glove classification, because like last year he was only eligible for the utility one. And I think the way that people vote on that is like utility is more infield than outfield or bouncing around. Chris Bassett like rails all the time about how Dalton Varsho didn't win a Gold Glove last year. Alex, it's not going to be Chris Bassett. We thought we'd see Chris Bassett yesterday. We're going to get Kikuchi instead today. This is an Orioles team I mentioned. They have hit the heck out of left-handed pitching this year. Only the Diamondbacks have a higher OPS plus against left-handed pitching. Some of that is guys like Gunnar Henderson and Colton Kowser doing good work lefty on lefty. But also, you know, we know Adley hits better from the right side as a switch hitter and things like that. Kikuchi's been so good this season. What are you looking for from him against the Orioles in a game like today?
Man, a lot. I mean, I'm trying to see if we can, you know, really do any significant damage to a majority of the pitches that he has. I mean, that curveball is absolutely fantastic. It's got a 190 expected WOBA right now, which is 81st percentile overall. I love the deception that he has. Obviously, he gets a really above average amount of extension, which just makes that fastball really competitive for him. I know he's given one or two home runs off of the four-seamer, but he's yet to give up a home run on the curveball overall. He's also yet to give up on the slider. And guess what? He's also yet to give up a home run on the changeup. So definitely going to be looking out for those breaking and off-speed pitches to see if the Orioles can do a little bit of damage. He's been a pleasure to watch, a guy that I feel like deserves just more recognition. He's been a pleasure to watch and feels like he's been consistent for quite some time now.
Yeah, and look, MLB-wide, you know, maybe the Jays just have to play a little bit better for him to get that recognition. But he's also going to be one of the top free agent starting pitchers on the market this offseason. So other teams can start rubbing their hands together too a little bit. On the other side, Kyle Bradish is going to go for the Orioles. Only two starts back off the IL, late start to the season. But early returns are really good. Building off what he did last year, nice low walk rate, ground ball rate is up. And he's missing a few more bats so far this season. Again, only two starts, only 9 2/3 innings. But what have you seen from Bradish in this first little step forward? And really him building on a season last year that I think a lot of people liked Kyle Bradish fine, but didn't really see like he's going to be on some Cy Young ballots level of upside for Kyle Bradish.
Yeah, I think the first thing that I was looking for in that first start back was just that slider. I mean, that slider was one of the best pitches in baseball last year, and seeing him get, you know, a good amount of whiffs in his return against the Yankees was absolutely fantastic. I don't want to say struggling a little bit with the zone, but kind of figuring out what the zone was in that last start against Washington, still picked up 12 whiffs on the day and spreading it out across the pitches. Slider picked up 5 whiffs, curveball picked up 3 whiffs, the sinker picked up 4 whiffs. But the thing that's been really interesting that I'm curious to see if this is a sample size issue, if this is something that Kyle Bradish is maybe turning into this year, is something that you just brought up, which is that ground ball rate. Last year, the ground ball rate already pretty elevated at 50%. It was good to see. This year, it's at 60%. Was able to use it to get some double plays, if I recall correctly, last time. So I'm excited to see if that trend continues. That's the ground ball rate in particular on the sinker has been really high. So again, like you said, 2 starts, under 10 innings. We're still waiting to see how he kind of settles into the role, but that's something I'm going to be keeping track of today and moving forward.
Yeah, and especially against right-handed hitters, the sinker usage is significantly up. So, not that it's a one-to-one. You throw more sinkers, you get more ground balls, but you replace a flatter four-seamer with a sinker that's got some dive to it. Maybe you are getting weaker contact on the ground. Alex, before I let you go here, we have a listener question, and it's from Mike Petriello. He asks, who is a better bass player, Alex Fast or Mike Petriello?
You know, it's so funny. Someone asked me that, and Mike Petriello is unbelievable. Fantastic talent, incredible writer, takes extremely high-end analytical concepts and is able to break them down in such a way that people can relate to them and understand them. But when it comes to bass playing, I think I got him beat.
All right. This is I'm going to have to hear some samples, and we'll really dig into this and judge. Alex, thanks for taking the time out this morning, man. Keep up all the great work. Loving the bat speed stuff, loving everything you guys are doing over at MLB.com and Baseball Savant.
Thanks, man. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate the time.
Alex Fast, Director of Content and Product Strategy at MLB, and allegedly a better base player than our pal Mike Petriello. Some good news for you. The tarp is off at Camden. So Hazel May and Dan Schulman updating us that they just pulled the tarp off the field. So we'll see if we're right on track for a 12:35 start or gets delayed a little bit. But it's looking pretty good right now. If you missed it earlier, it's Yusei Kikuchi on the hill today, not Chris Bassitt. Jays are going to juggle things a little bit. Manager John Schneider saying before the game that they looked at things like, well, okay, how has Kikuchi performed against the Orioles? The answer to that is not particularly well. How have the Orioles performed against left-handed pitching? The answer to that is really, really strong. So why is he starting instead of Chris Bassitt? Well, part of it is Chris Bassitt has struggled against lefties this year, and the Orioles could, if they wanted, stack the lineup full of lefties. There's also an element of Chris Bassitt is a little bit more flexible routine-wise and timing-wise. So the way things are going to line up is Kikuchi today, the off day tomorrow, and then you'll get Bassitt, Gausman, Manoa for the Rays series. That is the current plan anyway. The Jays will have had now, by the way, after tomorrow, because of this rainout and because of a quirk in the schedule, 5 off days in a 15-day stretch. That means their starters have gotten extra rest here and there, sometimes even 2 extra days of rest. That should be a positive for the long run, for keeping guys fresh. As you know, guys hit spots in the season where maybe there would be a wall, or if we're looking ahead to late season fatigue, should also mean at least for a little while, we don't have to hear about the bullpen being thin. I hope that that's the case. 5 off days over 15 days. Obviously guys have still pitched, you know, a lot within that. Jordan Romano had a 16 pitch save and then 2 days later had a 2 inning, 21 pitch save. Yeah, that's, there's a real element to that, a load element. But Tim Mesa hasn't pitched in a week. Trevor Richards hasn't pitched since Saturday. Yenesis Cabrera hasn't pitched since Friday. Zach Pop hasn't pitched since Saturday, etc. So even if they ended up needing a couple guys out of the pen today behind Kikuchi, they should head into that Rays series in pretty good shape. That's also the start of 13 games in 13 days. So if you're looking ahead to, bullpen freshness and things like that, these extra off days have come at a pretty good time, especially since the bullpen has been banged up in addition to overworked. I mentioned earlier, Bowden Francis had a really good rehab outing at AAA yesterday. I would imagine he is very, very close to rejoining the team. They don't necessarily need to rush it, but having their multi-inning guy back could be pretty valuable. And he did not look yesterday. I got to watch a little bit of that one. He did not look like he needed another rehab assignment before rejoining the team. George Springer is back today and leading off. Danny Jansen is back from the back spasms that kept him out of Monday's game. Justin Turner, the only guy still dealing with the illness, he is available off the bench. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Chris LaRue is going to join us. He's on the radio call today. We'll tee this game up proper. We'll go through more of these lineups and matchup things as Jays Talk Plus continues with Chris LaRue on the Sportsnet Radio Network at Sportsnet 360.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am joined now by Voice of the Toronto Blue Jays, color analyst on the Toronto Blue Jays radio broadcast on the Sportsnet Radio Network, Chris LaRue. Chris, thanks for joining me, man. How are we doing?
I'm doing awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. How'd you feel about that rain out yesterday? You drive all the way here, you do all your prep, and then it's like, no game, man, but you already did the work.
So I don't want to, you know what? I'm going to say it. I'm staying at my parents now. So, and they live in Mississauga. So it's a bit of a drive, especially with that jam on the Gardiner now, which I get stuck in every single day. I hear Blair and Barker talking about it all the time, and it's a real thing. It is a real thing coming from the west side and trying to get through that, but it's just part of life now.
Yeah.
It's just part of life.
You made it, man. And look, the tarp's coming off right now, so it doesn't look like we're going to get two of these days in a row. It looks like we're going to be good to go. 12:35, first pitch. It's you and Ben Schulman on the call. I guess before we get into the game, just how's it been going? I know you kind of rejoined us middle of last season and we're doing some games, but you've been in it like every single day now. I think you've done every game this season, right?
I think 40 games now.
Nice. How are we feeling?
I feel good.
Yeah.
Like it's there was a point in this during this season where I think there was 13 straight games. Yeah. And that's something that you really have to get used to. I know people are probably like, oh, you have a dream job. But it's still coming to work, preparing, working, and talking for three straight hours, which it's actually something that I don't really love doing. I know that you could talk to a wall for 3 hours.
But sometimes I want to shut up. I wish I could, you know? And guess what? You got a 13 in a row stretch coming up here starting Friday. So
but I'm used to it now.
Yeah.
So that's what I was going to say is I had to get used to that 13 in a row, waking up every morning and, oh, I don't have an off day or I don't have a weekend off. It's just 13 straight ball games. Yeah. But I do love it. And it's something that I've always wanted to do. I mean, it was a slow process. I was working part-time for like 4 or 5 years. And then I finally got the full-time job this year, but it's something that I've always wanted to do. And I love it, man. I really do.
Can you, how similar is the grind kind of to when you were a player? Like, I know you were a reliever for most of your time in the majors, so you're not, you know, it's maybe not the same as a position player, but that, like, hey, every day you got to be mentally ready, you got to be mentally on.
So the schedule is the exact same.
Yeah.
Like, I'm 100% used to the schedule. It's more of the it's less physical, obviously, and it's more of a mentally taxing thing where, like I said, I'm not used to talking for three straight hours and trying to figure out or analyze a swing or analyze somebody's mechanics. And like I said, you could do that with ease. That's what, you've probably been able to do that since you were a kid, right? But that's not something that I've really been doing my whole life. So I think that's more of the grind than the actual schedule. The schedule is easy. Like if you're used to the schedule, it's completely, completely fine.
So today we're going to get Yusei Kikuchi against Kyle Bradish and this Orioles team. We thought maybe it'd be Chris Bassett. They would juggle it yesterday. I mean, you've been in these spots before. Is your read on that decision? Kikuchi seems like a more like routine oriented guy, like more strict about his rep, whereas Bassett's a little bit more flexible. Or do you think this was more, hey, they dug into the numbers and there's something here Bassett Orioles was?
I think a little bit of both, but if I was John Schneider and I looked at how big this series is and how big this game is, I'm going with my best. And Chris Bassett, sure, he's been fine for the Blue Jays over the last couple of years, but this season he has been very up and down. You don't really know what you're going to get in terms of his stuff, in terms of the results. But Yusei Kikuchi has been lights out. He's been one of the best players, starting pitchers in all of baseball, and he's just so fun to watch. He dominates every single guy that he faces, regardless of who they are, Adley Rutschman, Gunnar Henderson, it doesn't matter. Yusei Kikuchi's, I'll take Yusei Kikuchi's stuff over Adley Rutschman's ability to swing the bat any day. And I think that that was the main decision when John Schneider was looking at the numbers and looking at the potential matchups. I think he kind of threw that to the side and was just like, I want Yusei to start this game. This is a huge game. We're, I think they're down 7.5 games now.
Yeah, behind. Eight, because the Yankees won yesterday and jumped the Orioles.
So there's 7.5 Orioles, 8 yeah. Yankees. This is a massive, massive game, and I would much rather have Yusei on that mound than Chris Bassitt.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense. And I went over a little bit earlier, you know, Bassitt struggled against lefties. The Orioles could stack a bunch of lefties. The Orioles have also smashed left-handed pitching this year. I think they're just a really good team, and it doesn't really matter. But there are a couple of guys who have had a lot of success against Kikuchi. Kikuchi, obviously, this year is a different pitcher than we've seen in years past. He's a better version of himself. That curveball is getting used a lot more and with a lot more confidence. But you see a guy like Ryan Mountcastle, for example, who has 4 career home runs off of him, an OPS of like 1.9 something. As a pitcher, is that something you're aware of? Like, can that get in your head a little bit if you've had so much trouble with one particular guy or a set of guys?
Well, I think that, so Yusei is a different guy this year than he has yeah. been in years past. He's walked one guy in the last 4 games. That's really hard to do.
Yeah.
His stuff is better. His obviously, his breaking ball, his curveball is one of the best in baseball. So he has clearly figured something out this year that he didn't have in years past. So if I'm Yusei Kikuchi, and sure, I know that people love to look at the numbers, but you have to look at it from a year-by-year basis. Is he a different guy than he was last year and then in years past? And if I'm John Schneider, and if I'm Yusei Kikuchi, I'm looking at that and I'm saying, yes, he is a completely different guy. He's throwing more strikes. He has the curveball. He's throwing that slider back foot to righties with ease. So I don't think that matters. I truly, and I've never been a numbers guy. And if you listen to Buck Martinez, he's not really a numbers guy either, obviously. He's more old school in his approach. And I'm a little bit, I tend to lean more old school than analytical. So I just use the eye test. I look at how he's doing this current season, and he's a guy that's just incredible. I hope that the Blue Jays are trying to sign him. I really do, just because he deserves a 2-year, $50 million contract. I would imagine you probably have crunched the numbers more than I have, but if I was Yusei and I was his management, I would probably look at 2 years, 25, or 2 years, 50, 3 years, 70. Is that pushing it?
I mean, maybe 70? Given the age, probably, yeah. Because he's into his 30s, but we'll yeah. see. It's not the most robust free agent starting pitching market. And obviously, if you come off a season where, I mean, if he keeps this up, he's going to be on a lot of Cy Young ballots as long yeah. as the Blue Jays can win him some games here.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's going to be a strong market for
but
him.
But I don't know how much he loves Toronto. He probably does. It seems like he does, but I don't know his agent either. If he was a Scott Boras guy, he would wait till the end of the season to have multiple teams bidding against him. But I think that if I was Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro, I would 100% be trying to get him to at least a 2-year deal, just because, I mean, if you want to win, I want Yusei Kikuchi on my team.
Yeah.
And that's just a fact. If he's not on my team going forward after this season, like, how do you fill that void? Alec Manoah?
Still only at 4 starters, right? Like,
yeah.
You need, this is part of the, I'm sure part of their thinking when they signed a bunch of these veteran guys was like, yeah, there'd be a wave of pitching prospects yeah. coming, but, you know, Tiedemann can't stay healthy. Manoah has been going through what Manoah's been going through. And yeah, the AAA's a little thin, man. Like, they're signing Aaron Sanchez because they need someone to eat innings at AAA Buffalo, not because they think Aaron Sanchez is going to be knocking on the major league door, right?
Yeah.
So it's, Kikuchi is going to get paid. He'll be 33 when he hits free agency. He wouldn't yeah. be the first 33-year-old to get a 3-year deal with some good money, given, yeah. you know, that I think 33 can be created differently, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's not coming off of Tommy John. He's been getting better into his 30s yeah. is a big yeah. part of it as well.
And I, so if I was Ross Adkins, and obviously I'm not, I would probably lean towards a 2-year deal just because, like you said, he's 33. I think he's in June, right?
Yeah.
He turns 33. So the majority of the season, he's going to be 33. And then next year, he's going to be 34. I know that doesn't sound old, but it's pretty old. I just turned 40 and I feel old.
Yeah, I just turned 38 and I there's one guy left on the team that is older than me. So I'm Justin Turner. Please stay around forever.
Yeah.
Please stay around forever. Okay, so I want to switch to the bullpen side here. So they'll have a pretty rested bullpen behind Kikuchi here. There are a couple guys who've only pitched once in the last week. Another off day tomorrow. So they're going to have had five off days in a 15-day stretch. Maybe they even get Bowden Francis back in there. So that's another fresh-ish arm. How, I mean, you worked out of the bullpen in your career. How valuable are those stretches where you're just not pitching a lot? And but is there like a risk of, hey, man, I haven't pitched in a week. I don't know how good I'm going to feel it the next time I go back out. What is the reliever? What are the non-Romano relievers feeling like right now?
Well, I think that a week is way too long.
Yeah.
And I know that in between those, you know, day one and day seven, you're throwing bullpens. You're trying to stay fresh. But there's nothing like throwing in a game. Right. And in my career, a lot of the time I was that bridge guy. I would throw the sixth or the seventh, even sometimes the fifth. So a lot of the time those games, you don't get those innings, right? Like a lot of the time the starter goes six or seven and then you get the Jimmy Garcia and then you get the Jordan Romano, game's over, you go shower. So for those guys like Eric Swanson, even a Trevor Richards, guys like that, the bridge guys, they have to stay ready. They have to throw those bullpens in between. But if they're not throwing for 5, 6, 7 days, they're not going to be fresh. And we see that with Eric Swanson. Eric Swanson comes into ball games, he looks terrible. And I know that he had that one game where he had a 3-up, 3-down inning.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, oh, he's back. And then he gives up a 2-run homer. And everybody's like, oh, he's not back.
How many outings would you need to like feel good before you're like, okay, I'm back if you're in that position?
That's a good question. I think that it's kind of case by case and person to person.
Yeah. For you though, like what was your
personally?
Feel?
From what? From being injured during spring training?
Injured or just like, hey man, I didn't have it for a couple games in a row there and now I feel back. Now my stuff's good. I feel comfortable out there.
Well, I didn't have it for a lot of games. but if I'm Eric Swanson, I am very frustrated at this point. I think that you can kind of see it on his face. It's almost like I hate saying this, but I hate watching him pitch now, not because of the stuff and not because of the potential for him to give up runs. I don't like looking at his face when he's pitching. It's like he's lost and he has no idea what he's doing out there. It was almost like Bo Bichette earlier on in the season when he was swinging at pitches that were 2 feet outside and everybody was wondering, what are you doing? It's kind of the same, thing with him on the mound right now. He just has no clue what's going on out there. And I don't know why the Blue Jays keep throwing him out there in crucial situations. That's the guy that you need to throw out there when it's 8-1 or 5-1, or you're down by 3, not up by 2, not a tie ball game.
Yeah.
And I think that John Schneider and Pete Walker know that. They just don't have anybody else, right? They need those bridge guys. People forget that those bridge guys are extremely important. Those are the guys that are only making like $950, $1 million a year. But those are extremely important parts of a bullpen. Sure, having a Jimmy Garcia is great. Having a Jordan Romano is great. But how are you going to get there, right?
Yeah.
If you say Kikuchi only goes 5 innings, how are you supposed to get 6, 7, and then Jimmy Garcia 8? It's really difficult, and it's hard to find those guys because, generally speaking, those really good pitchers are 8th inning guys or high leverage guys. Jimmy Garcia doesn't want to pitch in the 6th inning. Right.
Yeah. And like, unless it's the heart of the order with the bases loaded or something like that, you probably want to save him, right? You want to save him for a bigger spot. And on top of this, with the Swanson usage, they didn't have Jimmy Garcia for like a week also. So it was Romano and then a bunch of question marks because Meza hasn't pitched particularly well either. What have you mentioned Bo Bichette there. So he's got 8 hits in his last 5 games. Certainly to me looks a little better than he did earlier in the season, a little more comfortable. Are you seeing that as well? Like I know some of his hits have not been like rockets off the bat into the gap or anything like that, but are you seeing Bo Bichette get there?
He's a hard one to judge just because, like, I look at Vlad, and Vlad, you can tell when he's right. He's swinging at pitches in the zone. He's taking tough pitches just outside of the zone. But Bo's a guy that's always swung at pitches just outside of the zone. He's gotten hits, good line drives on tough pitches, you know, down in the zone, sliders, curveballs, all those things. Vlad's not that guy. Vlad waits for a hanging breaking ball or a fastball on the inner part of the plate, and then he does damage. But Bo's a tough guy, a tough nut to crack for me personally, because I'm not a position player. I never was, right? So it's hard for me to be like, oh, he looks good. To me, he just looks more confident up there, and I think that's important for Bo early on in the season when he was swinging wildly. He didn't really look confident. He was taking a lot of uncompetitive swings, and I think that was kind of a telltale sign for me as a pitcher that he wasn't really sure what he was doing up there. He was kind of lost. And then you look at Vlad, and Vlad is just taking pitches now that he wasn't taking early on in the season. He's hitting pitches that he should be hitting, right? Like early on in the season, he was swinging at sliders that were 2 feet out of the zone. They're starting as balls out of the pitcher's hand. If I'm a big league all-star, I shouldn't be swinging at that.
And where the catcher's set up, right? We've seen them set up, you know that's going to be outside unless they get crisscrossed or something
exactly.
like that.
The only way that he should be swinging at a slider out of the zone is if it starts in the zone and it looks like a good pitch to hit and then breaks out of the zone. No, that's the only way I'm forgiving him for swinging at a slider or a curveball out of the zone. But now, I mean, Vlad is, I think Vlad looks better now than he has at any time over the last 2 years. He looks incredibly confident. Yes, he's not really hitting for power, but everything he hits is just a rocket on a line. And I know you see that. And I know you look at the numbers, and I know that people want him to be hitting 450-foot homers, but as a baseball player, as a purist, I enjoy watching him hit a good line drive to the right fielder or to the left fielder or just in front of the fence in right center. Those are those hits that I look at him and I'm just like, man, that was a good swing.
Yeah, and your top five in batting average over the last month, like that's still helping a team. I know this team has been so dry for home runs that him only having four hurts a little bit. You want him to be, you know, on a 30 home run pace instead of a 20 home run pace. But yeah, you hit 400 for a month. I'm going to take it.
Good time to trade him. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
Yeah, you can't do that as I have to let you go so you can go do the radio broadcast. Yeah. Chris, get out of here, man. You and Ben Schulman on the call at 12:30. Appreciate you taking some time out.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
All right. Chris LaRue, him and Ben Schulman on the call. It's a 12:35 first pitch. The tarp is getting rolled up, so it does look like, per the beat people down in Baltimore, that we're going to start on time, which is nice. There's also a weird day online. Adam Schefter, the NFL reporter, teasing Raptors news, which is all sorts of odd. Not a lot of Jays news to give you here other than the starting rotation juggling here, which we've mentioned. Yusei Kikuchi starts today. Chris Bassett's going to move to Friday. Doesn't sound right now as if they're going to use Alek Manoah, either that they're going to tweak Alek Manoah's schedule. He's scheduled to start Sunday right now. They did have the option to maybe bump him to Monday so he'd face the White Sox, who are the worst offense in baseball. They're going to let him roll with Tampa Bay on Sunday. That is the current plan, at least. John Schneider, in addition to that, also spoke about just how good and valuable Jimmy Garcia has been. Jimmy Garcia has always been pretty solid. This is his third season with the Blue Jays, and he's having a career year. His ERA is under one. It's 0.59. He's striking out almost 40% of the batters he's faced. He's barely walking anyone. He's missing more bats than he ever has before. Here's John Schneider talking pregame about just how good Jimmy Garcia has been and why it's tough to pull Jimmy Garcia out of games at times.
Yeah, I mean, the sweeper's a new pitch, obviously. The velo has been there consistently, and I think he's locating his fastball really well at the top of the zone. That's kind of been his MO, the sweeper being new, but it's weird. He's got four pitches as a reliever. You know, changeup is really good to lefties. And he's really locating everything really well right now. I think this time last year he was struggling to kind of spot things up and down, and right now he's pretty much nails with it.
He seems to be a pretty calm guy, but I also wouldn't want to mess with him.
Nope.
How does that help him on the mound?
Yep, very well said. Very calm, but yeah, he's a tough guy to take out of a game. just because you're a little bit afraid of what he may do or say to me or you. I think he's been around enough to, you know, whether it's big leagues, winter ball, postseason, he kind of gets, you know, what he's coming into, and you know, doesn't budge, doesn't let anything faze him. So he's one of those guys. He's gentle giant, but you do not want to be on his bad side.
Yeah, definitely wouldn't want to be on the bad side of Jimmy Garcia or in the batter's box staring him down. Maybe we'll see him later today behind Yusei Kikuchi. This is who Yusei Kikuchi is going to see first time through. And Ben and Chris will get you set up for the game starting at 12:30 on the Sportsnet Radio Network. But here is the Orioles lineup. It's going to be Jordan Westberg getting a shot to lead off at the top today, followed by Adley Rutschman getting a DH day. Ryan Mountcastle, who in addition to being a Jays killer, has been a Yusei Kikuchi killer historically, 4 career home runs off of him and an OPS of 1.912. Didn't realize OPSs could get that high over a decent sample. Mountcastle will be followed by Gunnar Henderson in the cleanup spot, Anthony Santander, Jorge Mateo, who also has some pretty good numbers against Kikuchi, Colton Cowser in left. James McCann starts behind the plate and hits eighth. Cedric Mullins rounds it out in center field, batting ninth. I mentioned Kyle Bradish is going to get the start today. He's been very good through 2 outings. Some interesting decision on the Jays side. Justin Turner available if needed during the game, but he's the one guy who's still a little worse for the wear from this illness going around. George Springer is not. He is back and will lead off. Followed by Dalton Varsho, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette, Danny Jansen back in there after dealing with back spasms earlier in the week. He'll hit fifth. Davis Schneider hits sixth. Schneider doesn't have any career plate appearances against Kyle Bradish. Bradish has started against the Jays 6 times in the last 2 years, but Davis Schneider has obviously only been here for a quick minute. Davis Schneider does, though, have very strong numbers against righty sinkers in general, and particularly in Kyle Bradish's velocity range. So maybe a good day for him as well. Bradish is kind of just a sinker slider guy against righties, and then we'll mix in 4 or 5 pitches against lefties. Very similar in that way to Jose Berríos, who you know well. Behind David Schneider is Daniel Vogelbach hitting seventh and DHing. So that means 3 lefties are in the lineup. Kevin Biggio, the 1 lefty out. Who knows if Vogelbach's in there only because Justin Turner is still feeling sick, or they like something with the Bradish matchup, but not your usual DH option there with Turner out. Ernie Clement hits eighth and plays third. Kevin Kiermaier rounds it out in center field, so that bumps Dalton Varsho to left. Looking at some of the matchup stuff, I know people are running out of patience with George Springer at the top. We've talked about it a ton. I think the main reason here is still that they just want to be patient with George Springer. Because they need him to get going and turn it around. He is 7-for-17 with 5 extra base hits against Bradish in his career, and most of that is recent sample. He's 824 slugging against him. So again, a guy who doesn't have like super high-end velocity, maybe it's a spot that they like for George Springer here. Danny Jansen's homered off of him. There are 3 lefties in the lineup. Kyle Bradish only has modest splits, so about what we'd expect. Yeah, he's a righty. Lefties will hit a little bit better against him. And something to watch for, because Bo and Vlad have both been hitting better of late, is that they both have decent numbers against Kyle Bradish's career. Again, they've seen him 6 times over the last 2 seasons, so there's a familiarity there. They are a combined 10-for-32 with 3 home runs and 3 walks and only 3 strikeouts over those 35 plate appearances. So they've done a good job getting bat to ball against Bradish. On the Kikuchi side, yeah, there are some guys in addition to Mountcastle who have pretty good numbers against him. Adley Rutschman, Anthony Santander, Jorge Mateo have all done well against him in a large sample. But like Chris LaRue laid out for us, that was a different version of Yusei Kikuchi. Now, the Orioles could say the same thing. It's a different version of Kyle Bradish. He's looked a little better through his 2 starts here. You can always pick at career sample, things like that. But I would think it's probably encouraging for the Blue Jays that, yeah, this Orioles team has not seen a Yusei Kikuchi that throws his curveball this effectively and this much. A Yusei Kikuchi that has this much comfort with the changeup. He threw 9 in his last start, which is his 2nd most of the season. The Orioles tend to hit pretty well against lefty breaking ball, so maybe we see even more of that changeup today. The Orioles just hit everything well is the takeaway from trying to decide between Chris Bassett and Yusei Kikuchi in this case. There is no good answer against this Orioles team. Having said that, the Jays did beat them on Monday. They have a chance to take a series here. It would only be a 2-game series, but it would be the first time in 104 series that the Orioles have lost one. So the Jays don't really care about the Orioles streak, I'm sure, but it'd be really nice for the Blue Jays to add another win here in the division before heading into a big series this weekend against the Tampa Bay Rays. This has been an extended Jays Talk Plus. Ben Schulman and Chris LaRue have the call for you coming up. It's Dan Buck and Hazel on the TV side, and Blair and Barker will be with you, of course, for Jays Talk postgame. We'll be back with you at 11 a.m. tomorrow to break this one down. Thank you to Julia Kreutz, Chris LaRue, and Alex Fast for joining us. Thanks to Amit Mann, Lance Kennedy, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. Yusei Kikuchi against one of the best lefty hitting lineups of baseball. Let's see it. Best versus best. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.